Okay, we're going to bring up the rest of the team and just open it up for any remaining questions. Okay, any other, just any general questions, or you can keep going on TMVR if you'd like. Yeah, back there.
Sorry, so it's still on TMVR. Maybe you could help us, because we don't always get the competitor intelligence, and I'm hoping you have more insight there. So you talked about doing 13 implants of the 20. Well, sorry, 13 patients having done 10 implants. Have you any idea of what the leading programs, competitor programs, have done in the way of successful implants or implants?
It's hard to get good information. What I would tell you is that there's been about 150 implants, TMVR implants, done so far, and I'd say about 25 of those have been transfemoral, and the rest have been transapical. Ballpark.
Scott. Yes, Scott.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to follow on a couple of questions for both Alistair and Jason. Jason, carrying on from the interesting discussion we had over lunch, just wanted to understand the near-term tangible opportunity in treatment-resistant depression in Germany. So the devices currently, are they reimbursed at a similar sort of level to epilepsy, or can you give some sense there? It seems to me that there are something like 8 million treatment-resistant depressives in Germany, which could mean a triple-digit million number. So how does one go about penetrating the current approved reimbursed opportunity in Germany?
Can you hear me? In Germany, the device is reimbursed. It's reimbursed very similar to the way that it's reimbursed in epilepsy. The pathway to do that is not just straight pass-through. There is a process in order to work with the Ministry of Health in order to secure that reimbursement, but they are paying. So what we're trying to do in Germany is really map out what this process looks like so that we can expand into other markets that have favorable reimbursement climates. So in Germany, although there's reimbursement, there's a process, and we're really starting to map the process from the first conversation with the physician all the way through the hand-holding to the surgical procedure and then post-follow-up. So as we map that out, we'll be able to give you a better idea of what that number is. But one of the bottlenecks in terms of exploring that huge opportunity right now is working through the process of how we do that. So it's sort of a lessons learned in a process to figure out which way we're going to go. We should have better line of sight in terms of what that looks like over the course of the next probably 12 months.
And you mentioned that there were some other countries in Europe that had favorable reimbursement. Can you just remind us which ones they are?
Sure. We're working with the Nordics at this point in time. Denmark will pay for this device. Sweden and Norway have opportunity in order to potentially explore this possibility. We're working with the NHS in the UK in order to find a pathway to move forward. And then we're looking at special technology funds and things like that in areas like the Benelux, particularly the Netherlands. And we have gotten some conditional use even in France, but it's on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you. And last question, please, for Alistair. Again, relates to Percival. I know you talked about the Japanese approval. It's my understanding that Percival is being used quite a lot for patients with small anatomies at the moment in the US, and I would have thought that lent itself quite well to Japan. So can you talk a little bit about how big that opportunity is in Japan for the sustainability of the franchise post-18?
Yeah. So, you know, just to provide a little bit of context maybe to the others in the room with the question, we do have currently have a gap in our portfolio with the extra large size in Percival, which kind of limits about 10 to 15% of procedures. The early work that we've done with the Japanese market, that does not seem to be a concern for them. In terms of, you know, timing for this, our expectation is, you know, approval this year and then commercialization, you know, first half of next year would be the kind of timing for Japan. In terms of market size, this would probably be about the third or fourth largest market, you know, that we have. have for per parcel on a global basis. The encouraging thing, and why we're excited about Japan as well, is that our market share for our traditional valves is significantly higher in Japan than it is elsewhere, and we've got a very strong brand and market presence in there, and a good team which is, you know, ready to take, you know, personal forward.
Other question.
Was in Tokyo last Monday ahead of the meeting yesterday in New York, and spending time with JLL, our partner there, and we were talking specifically about how to ensure we're accelerating our investment and attracting the talent to build into this. So, you know, we have a partner that's really, you know, interested in growing into this with us, and we're putting additional resources into Japan to capture this. So it's a great opportunity.
Other questions?
I was going to say, I can't believe we filibustered the room.
Jason, I just want to ask about the pediatric approval in the United States and how to think about that opportunity. And my understanding is, you know, there has been a significant amount of off-label use already in patients under the age of 12. So when you think about now having it on-label for that group, you know, how what can that do for the business is really the question.
Right. Let me give you a couple of comparatives to start with. In the U.S., about 70% of our implantations come with patients 18 years of age and older, and 30% are below the age of 18. When you go outside of the United States, that paradigm shifts dramatically. We have about 65% of patients which are under the age of 18, and the rest come above the age of 18. So we think that there's an opportunity to have a new discussion, because historically, when a physician would come and propose a patient that was under the age of 12, we had to instantly, as a commercial team, say, you must understand that's off-label. We can't discuss it. So it empowers the sales force to, number one, be able to make claims, and to be able to engage in a conversation, also from a marketing perspective, to do the same thing. So that's really where the runway starts to open up. I think the other part of this that's important, too, is as we expand into clinical research, I mean, one of my big drives is to get an early adjunctive study to reinforce the clinical data around earlier use and moving VNS therapy up in the treatment algorithm rather than using it as a treatment of last resort. So having that bandwidth now to go to children at 4 years of age and younger is a really big win for us.
You know, the other question is on the replacement cycle for generators. You know, I think your replacement growth in the last couple of years has been a little low. I think it's been the very low single digits. What are the prospects for an acceleration there? You know, if you look at the de novo implants, it seems like it should be at a point where they start to pick up again. Is that a fair assumption, or what's your view on that?
It's kind of a moving target. You know, the device that we built before Aspire SR was called Aspire HC, which is a high-capacity device, translation, very big, very powerful battery. It's a heck of a device, and it lasts a really long time, is the reality. So the introduction of that device was really to counter some concerns around the battery longevity of the previous device before that, which was our DemiPulse device. So in doing so, we solved one problem but sort of created another one. Not that battery longevity is a problem, but I like to have devices that last around 5 to 7 years because it enables you to innovate and enables patients to get the latest and greatest. So as we continue to innovate, we'll focus on a 5 to 7 year trajectory. And, you know, to your point, yes, we have had some impact in terms of our end of service business. However, what I'm really evaluating in terms of the health of my business is my new patient implants. And that's where we've seen high single to low double digit growth. So that encourages me.
But it's fair to say that this innovation cycle, the SR and then Sentiva, I think is probably going to trigger an upgrade cycle and give people a chance to re-explore. Is this the right time for them to switch out?
Yeah, with the introduction of Aspire SR, we've seen in many scenarios where there are physicians that just think it's a better device, and they are applying for reimbursement for an Aspire SR, even though the patient may have an HC or a battery that's not completely depleted, because they think it's the right thing to do for the patient. And so far, we have not had reimbursement headwinds in that regard. You know, again, as we innovate, we want to make sure that we have a battery that's consistent and something that we can stand behind. But at the same time, the 5 to 7 year market, I think, is really the sweet spot, as opposed to building devices that last 15 years.
Any other questions? I think we've exhausted them.
Yeah. Well, look, just let me, first of all, thank a few people. Firstly, the team. For all your prep and the broader team. I think, you know, everyone will agree it was a great day, great interaction. Karen, the IR team, phenomenal engagement and setting up, and
hopefully what you're seeing from us is a different conversation. We've tried very hard over the last 8 months to be much more accessible. Met with many of you multiple times, and I think hopefully what you're seeing from us is a different level of conversation. We want this to be a conversation, not points in time. And I think you've seen a different level of responsiveness from us, and I continue to believe that that's the best way for us to go forward. We can't do this without you, and I appreciate the fact that so many of you have been so candid in some of our discussions. Yes, Terry, I'm looking at you. I really appreciate these conversations. It makes us stronger. You come to us with great ideas, and I'd really like to continue that. So, this is our first outing in a group format with the Investor Day, but we'd like to continue that. Please leave with the three messages. We're growing. We've got growth drivers, near-term and long-term. We're profitable. We've got things in place. We're not talking about it. We're actually doing it. We have teams assigned. We're measuring it. We're holding people accountable. And, again, you saw my dynamic, talented, and very experienced team on show. This is just a sliver of the talent that I think we have, and we're looking forward to continuing this conversation, the journey, and creating more shareholder value. So with that, let's wrap it up, and we'll give you some time out with the booth. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.